Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrapped Web. Mr. Brian Castle, how are you, my friend?
Yes. I'm doing all right. A little tired today, but yeah. Good times. Exactly. I'm in between Big Snow Tiny comps this week.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ooh, I want to hear a little bit about how the last one was.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Last week, we were up in Vermont. This was the first year that we went to Stowe, Vermont. Every year before this, this was like the seventh year we've done Big Snow, but every year before this, we were in Sugar Bush. And this year, we got this like nice new house. Like the house was amazing, like huge house, all new construction, great rooms to hang out in. Got one really good day of snowboarding in, and then the second day was total shit, just rain.
Oh, yes.
And we still went out there, and it was just a shit show. but really good group, a lot of returning people, a couple of new faces, people that I just met for the first time. So, yeah, it was just a really good trip, except for the fact that I was sick, and this almost never happens to me, but I lost my voice, like, the whole week. I was hanging out at this place where I'm talking all day. I don't know what I think I had this like head cold that just got to my voice somehow. And it got to the point where, like, you know, we do these sessions, these like mastermind sessions and everything, where I was like responding to people by like asking questions. I would type them out in Slack and have like Chad like read them for me. It's ridiculous.
Did it make you more introspective? Were you a better listener?
I think I was. I think I jumped in less. So that was
okay,
good.
Okay. and then next week is Colorado.
Yeah, that's right. So a couple of days, I'm going to fly out to Colorado and do the whole thing again. Dave Rodenbaugh does a great job of heading up that one, and really looking forward to it.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I'm not between trips. It feels very much like this past week was the first time we actually got back to normal as a company since the holidays. So the holidays threw everything off. First, we moved offices here in Portland. That was disruptive. Then the holidays were, you know, just kind of all systems go for a few weeks. Then the holidays and New Year's, for, you know, with everyone with their families. And then the Slovenian team moved offices. So that was disruptive for them. And they just got settled last week. And it feels like for the first time in 3 months, we kind of have all systems back to normal. Normal cadence, product, support, everything kind of humming along nicely.
Yeah, that's awesome. So so what do we got on the list today? I know that you and I both have a couple things to get into. What do you got?
Yeah, I have two things. Number one is our changing our stance as a company from very defensive to offensive. That's number one. And then the bigger thing that's on my mind and that's kind of like dominating the conversation here internally is about churn and how that relates to positioning and pricing and our future and just a whole bunch of different factors that we're trying to get right now with an eye toward the future and the overall health of the company and the customer base. So that's the second and bigger thing that I want to talk about. How about you?
Very nice. Well, I'll talk all about Sunrise KPI, which is the new app that I built and basically launched. Right now, I'm sort of like in the midst of the rollout to the very first users. I have invited the first users and got a couple of first paying customers. I'm going to talk all about that. There are some kind of frustrating things for me. Maybe I'm just being a little bit impatient that I'll want to talk through and maybe just get your feedback on this. So there's that. You know, on that, I'm going to just talk about like some of the things that I have put in place already on Sunrise, my process for how I have been inviting the very first users. I'll give you the exact metrics. I'll be open about all that. And there are just a couple of questions on my mind right now about what more to do on Sunrise and also like how much more work or investment of time does it justify and, you know, questions like that. A lot of these questions I'm also going to bring with me to Colorado next week and get those guys feedback on this. So it's kind of it's a good time.
Yeah, I want to hear more about, is this a limited product and it gets built and then it gets left alone? Or do you start to see that there's an infinite amount of work that you could potentially do it and then you have to go out of your way to identify the limits?
I mean, real quick, you want to just talk about that question? Like, yeah, before I even get into like the details,
right?
Just bigger picture. Sunrise KPI really started almost as like a personal experiment project. It was really like a practice coding project, but it was very much a real app that I wanted to build, like that I am literally using myself every day. So it started out like that, and it sort of started out a few months ago, back when I thought I was going to be partnering up with someone on ProcessKit. I had a couple weeks to waste and like sort of wait for that to come around. It ultimately ended up not coming around, but during those weeks I started working on Sunrise, and then as I got it out there, it really got a lot of traction and sort of became like more of like a real product that I started launching. And now it's been about 2 months or so of building it, which really surprises me that I was actually able to get that much done on it so fast. But it's like now I'm at that question of like, what is it to me? Is it a little side hustle thing? I do have ideas to grow it, like add a higher tier and different things. And I have a lot of requests and stuff like that. But I do very much want to get back onto ProcessKit. That's sort of my big goal for the year, especially right after I get back from Colorado. That's what I want to dive right back in on. I'm questioning now, like, do I wait a couple more weeks and put a little bit more work into Sunrise? Like, a lot of it will depend on how the next week or two plays out with the first users onboarding. Yeah, like, I'm just trying to think through, like, is this a serious thing, or is this, like, just for fun right now? I don't know.
Well, it would be easier if you had practiced, built, launched, and then, you know, it didn't get much attention and you chalk it up as practice. The dangerous thing is that it gets just enough traction to warrant your attention, but not enough to outshine a different opportunity that you'd be giving up.
There's also like questions around we'll get into it, but some questions around the price point. Like, even if it gets a bunch more customers, it's still not going to make that much revenue unless I come out with a higher tier. So there's some questions there. Like, I don't know.
I'll tell you one of the topics of conversation that we've been having, like the MicroConf Portland crew, that we actually went out last night, shout out. So there's a website called 1KP or 1K Projects. And it's just for these little type of projects. And, you know, at least one of the people in the Portland group has been like buying it and experimenting. And it's really interesting to see someone who has a core business, but wanted to experiment with something. He had a similar situation where there was development work that was being done that really was going to take a few months. So he had some time. So he bought one of these products on 1KP and is like testing out his skills on SEO, on how do I hire contractors that have great design but are still very affordable. It's almost like a flex of like your skills as an entrepreneur, but it doesn't affect your core product. But he's also curious to see, like, what if this thing grows faster than expected? Then what do? Do you just sell it off, or do you give it attention?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So,
okay, cool. So, what do you think? We should go into my like offense defense thing, and then hear about your fuller comments on Sunrise and the metrics.
Let's do that.
And okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so quick setting of context. Ever since we launched the checkout product, we've had the very fortunate situation of having a lot of inbound demand. So that's great, but what it created over the span of 2 years is it created an organization and a mindset that was, for lack of a better word, defensive. We were just taking in whatever inbound interest and trials and attention was coming our way, and we were dealing with it, managing it, trying to convert more people, giving a better experience, taking feedback, and we really did not have a chance to go on offense at all. We were just, the first year was just dealing with the product and making sure it got better. And the second year was just the growth. And then the holidays came around and we just kind of held on for dear life. We're trying not to break anything, continue releasing features, but stability was more important than progress on features. So what I started talking to the team about a few months ago was, once we get through this holiday period, we need to change our stance. We need to go on offense. I mean, if you look at our organization chart, it's like a pyramid shape of one marketer and everyone else behind them. Success, then support, then product, then tech, right? There's literally no offense. There's no one out in front generating demand and interest and trials and attention. It's just whatever's coming our way. And that is cool for a while, but at some point, you got to go find your own customers instead of just accepting whatever comes our way.
I've got to think that we'll talk about it more, but this has got to play into that churn question, right? Of like, if you go on offense, it's not just about growth. It's about finding the right customers
exactly
into the top right. of the funnel.
And that is what not only just being impatient on and starting to get more aggressive on, okay, the product's better, the product's ready, let's go show the world what we have. The other side of it is just what's happening in our churn. What percentage of our customers are ideal customers and which are just not? Like, how many of the trials that come in, the people that pay, the people that come on board are just not the right customers, given our pricing and our position, all these other things that we want to be true. So here's what we've done. What we did is we took Matt, who's been with us for 2 years, in customer success. And he is just great at relationships and people. And so we started bringing him out front. And so what I mean by that is we went to an event in New York and I brought him with me. So I did a workshop. It was a integration partner. They were putting on an event in New York. I did a workshop and he came with me and started biz dev to just change the role from success to biz dev. Cause it was a clearly identifiable talent. Like, this guy's just really good at people and relationships. And he was just naturally forming relationships with agencies, and those agencies would then send us customers. That's how we just signed our biggest customer ever, right? Native deodorant. Okay.
Yeah. About that. Like, all right. So it sounds like he's sort of like natural at that, you know?
Yes.
Like, how do you start someone on that role? Like, did you give him any sort of direction, or like, this is what has worked for you in the past when it comes to business dev and getting these relationships, or like any sort of process, like, or were you just like, hey, just have at it, you know, try a bunch of stuff and see what works?
Okay. So I'll tell you that in a sec. So what started to identify that talent is just proof. We signed our biggest, most like high exposure customer ever in Native deodorant. Normally in the past, when it came to a big customer, our whole strategy and process was, let's just put Jordan on the call and hope that works out better, right? And that was not sustainable. But Matt basically brought Native deodorant from the agency relationship to the referral to the onboarding process all the way to a paying customer. It was like, all right, you've proven yourself. Then that was like the ultimate. So now we say to ourselves, okay, let's move Matt from customer success out to biz dev. So the first thing we need to do is replace the capacity in customer success. So our head of success is now tasked with, okay, you need to find a replacement. Someone who's experienced in success, who's going to help us and get up to speed very quickly. Cool. Now we put Matt out front. We give him a new role, a new title, the whole deal. So now we're at the point where you're asking about, like, all right, how do you start? So what I did is I went back to a playbook that has worked for us over and over again, which is get a coach, get some expertise that comes from experience and outside the company and inject it into the company in an efficient way that's, you know, call it $100 an hour. And so what I did was I basically imprinted my point of view. I spoke with the coach, and now we're going to start to hand it off so that Matt can work with the coach directly on a weekly basis to get the 30-day plan, 60-day plan, understand which channels are working, how do you double down on them, how should we formalize these things, and so on.
How'd you find the coach? Like, someone that you just knew of or knew?
Someone in the MicroConf Portland crew had worked with this person before and then was working with them to hire their first salespeople also.
I mean, I've seen you do that model of, like, you know, hire a coach and that makes a lot of sense. But that's like the biz dev, the relationship stuff seems like what you have brought to the table for most of Cardhook, right? So it's like,
yeah, but as a founder, you do it informally, you do it naturally. You're so excited about what you're doing. People are just attracted to someone who's super passionate about this new thing. And, you know, and that's not a process.
Yeah. You need a non-founder's.
Yes. And, as the CEO, you want to know that a process is running, not that someone's just floating around that happens to be talented and hoping that things work out.
Audience Ops is very much running with very, very little of my time. But my time that I do spend, it's only like 2 hours a week, if that, right now, is the sales. And it's really just taking inbound.
To close the deals.
Organic inbound. Like, they get educated automatically, and then they talk to me for a bit, and then and then I sort of hand them off to the team. One of the things that I've been sort of struggling with wrapping my head around for 2019 was like, I would like to maybe get someone to take up that sales and like biz dev and do some actual outbound sales and marketing for audience ops, because we haven't really done much of that in the last year or so. My challenge with that is I don't really have anyone off the top of my head who would really fit that role, but I could be limiting myself there. Maybe I'm not being as open-minded as I should be, but right now on the team, everyone's sort of like in a production role. They're not really in the sales and marketing side. So
sounds a bit like us, a lot of defense in handling what's coming in and servicing them, but not much on the outside of the process. So what I'll tell you, what I injected in terms of my opinion, the things that I was like, okay, here's what I want to see. Like, I know you have expertise, but this is what I want to see. So it comes from a mistake that I made originally. When I started out and I was doing the prospect and the hunting, I did the cold email for the cart abandonment app, the whole deal. What would happen is whenever I was successful in generating interest and generating trials and demos, I would then go service those myself and help them get onboarded and do the demo and do the closing and so on. And whenever I did that, it meant I stopped hunting. And so the only thing I injected into the whole thing was, all I want to make sure is that we do not set up the hunter. Right now, one person in biz dev. Well, we're also going to hire a salesperson to do more direct outreach. But those two who are on offense, I don't want them to be punished by their own success. So when they are successful in generating interest and demos and trials, they are not the ones that handle them. We have a handoff. We almost want what I called a natural tension. We want the hunters to be so successful that they're stressing, that there's tension between them and the people who are capturing that interest in doing the demos and the onboarding and all that. I want that. I want to hear guys, slow down. We can't handle that many trials. And then I know, okay, it's time to hire more.
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean, audience ops is set up a little bit differently. Like, we don't have like free trials or anything like that. And I don't do anything when it comes to once they're a paying customer, they go directly over to the team and I don't really handle any of the onboarding. But what I think what I should think about, see, this is the thing. I wasn't planning on like investing any of my time into this, but I should, like what you were just saying, like I should maybe find someone to do that like outbound prospecting to just drive more leads and then sort of decouple that from doing the sales calls. Like, I'll still do the sales calls, because like that's all I'm doing right now anyways. Like, I'm just handling inbound sales calls. If somebody can just drive more inbound leads, that's a big win right there. And then like step two would be to remove myself from the sales calls, maybe with someone
right.
else.
And what it forces you to do is to look at your actual process and where the areas of responsibilities change and where the handoffs are. So the first thing the sales consultant is doing next week in a 2-hour session is help us define what our process should look like. Who should be responsible for what? Which role is responsible? Where do the handoffs happen? Because we started going into it and immediately noticed our assumptions were not in line. So the success team assumed that the biz dev and the sales were going to go all the way to the point of a paying customer. And then once they're a paying customer, then success takes over. And then sales and biz dev were looking at me like, but I don't want to do all that onboarding stuff. I want to keep hunting. So then all of a sudden it popped up the need for, we kind of need an onboarding specialist as a role. It doesn't mean we hire someone. It means it's a role of its own. And we are going to task success with currently being responsible for that role. But as soon as we're ready and able, we hire for that role because it is separate. So if someone comes on board and, okay, you're now on the customer success team in Carthook, yes, you're going to be doing onboarding and demos and getting people from trial to paying customer. That won't be your responsibility forever. So you might do it for 3, 4, 5 months and then keep an eye on which one you like better. Do you like onboarding people or do you like after the sale? Because when we hire someone, you can kind of have your choice on what you prefer. So it's like the definition of the process is just as hard as that. You need to start there before you even know who to hire and what type of person to hire. And it's exciting because it feels like we're finally going to go on offense.
Yeah. Sweet.
All right, Bryce. So that's my end of things on the sales and offense front. Talk to us about Sunrise. What? Give us some numbers. What's happened?
All right. So yeah, let's talk about sunrisekpi.com. That's where the site is. As of this recording, I haven't made it open to the public yet. So it's still all invite only. But I did start sending the first invites to people who I had on the early access list. I only started building the early access list like a month ago. So I think as of today, there's like 750 or 800 people on there. I have sent out 230 invites. That was before the batch that I just sent today, like 2 hours ago. I sent like another 100 today. But basically 230 have been out. Of those, 195 people have signed up for free accounts on Sunrise.
Hold on. Out of 230 invites, 195 people have signed up?
Yes.
Okay. That's a high percentage.
Yeah, those are free accounts. We can get into the pricing in a bit. There's a free plan and a pro plan. Now, of those 195, I'm considering quote unquote activated, meaning you have added at least one metric.
At least one. Okay.
You've connected, like, you know, for those who don't know, like Sunrise, you connect all your different metrics like Google Analytics, you know, Twitter, your Drip, ConvertKit, whatever else you want to connect. Like, if you've connected at least one, I'm considering you activated. So 165 of the 195 are activated. They've connected at least one metric. There are about 30 people who just signed up and didn't do anything.
Also high percentage.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with that. Now we get into sort of like the limits, like butting up against upgrading to pro, right? So the way that I have it set up now is you can connect up to four metrics for free. And you can only connect one of each type. So if you want like two Google Analytics metrics or two websites or anything like that, that you got to go to pro. So I counted the number of people who have connected three or four metrics. So they're kind of butting up against there are 48 people as of today who have three or four metrics. It's sort of like split evenly. So those 48 people, I would say, are they're a higher likelihood than the rest,
right,
to upgrade at some point.
Yep. That's all you know for now.
And now the big metric everyone's probably waiting for is how many people have upgraded to paying customers.
What does paying customer mean? How much? What's the tier? What's the stated?
Right now, there's only one pro tier. It's $15 a month, which is too low. I want to raise it. Three people are paying customers $45 in monthly recurring revenue. Woohoo! I am not that thrilled with that number, obviously. But I feel like it is very early in this process. Like, I literally started inviting these people like three or four days ago. Some people came in, maybe like 20, 25 came in about a week ago. And then I did a lot more like 3 or 4 days ago. So, you know, so far it's a pretty low conversion rate of free to paid, but I feel like I can't quite draw any conclusions on this yet. Until about a week or two from now, from the time that we're recording this, so here's what I've put in place so far in terms of like the flow. I have in-app prompts to upgrade. So there's a button near the top that's visible at all times, like upgrade to pro. And then as you start to add metrics, you know, once you hit a limit, like you've already added a Twitter, if you try to add a second one, it will point you to upgrade, things like that. And then I have put in place a basic series of onboarding emails. Right now I'm using MailChimp actually for the Sunrise list. And so I wrote, I don't know, like three or four, like how to get set up in Sunrise. And as you get near the end of that series, like I think there's like four, maybe five emails in there. The fourth or fifth really start to push you towards like, here are pro features that you're missing out on, you know. And then there are some calls to action to upgrade. Nobody has even reached those emails yet. Like, the people are probably like halfway through that series right now. So I still need to wait on how those sort of make an impact. The other thing, this came out of direct feedback that I had while I was in Vermont. I hadn't thought of this until somebody suggested it. Okay, so one of the features of Pro is, so all users have the option of getting automatic reports every week, every month, or every quarter. If you're a pro user, you can get them every day. automated sending to your inbox. Free users can't do every day, but I added a 14-day free trial on that. So if you're a free user, you're going to get daily emails for the first 14 days.
Okay.
And then they're going to turn off. It's going to automatically revert to weekly. So on day 13 from MailChimp, I have an email that says like, hey, like daily emails are ending for you tomorrow. You know.
Right. And that hasn't hit yet either.
That has not hit yet. Probably like, I don't know, 6 or 7 days away from that. That's kind of where it's at right now. And so I've sent about 230 invites. There are about 600 left that are on the list, like waiting for an invite. And I'm probably going to, you know, send out like 100 a day for the next, well, I'm traveling all of next week. So I might do a little pause on this, but yeah, that's where it's at. In terms of the app itself, I also shipped a bunch of integrations more integrations this week. So
I saw your Twitter feed is very exciting these days.
Yeah. So like originally the app had Google Analytics, Google Sheets, which is really cool because you can connect almost anything from a Google Sheet to Sunrise. And you can use Zapier to a Google Sheet. Twitter was in, Drip, MailChimp, and ConvertKit were all in about a week ago. And then in the last couple of days, I added Facebook. So if you have a Facebook page, you can track how many likes and followers you have.
And I saw people want Shopify. That's interesting.
Instagram. And then Shopify, I'm working on it right now. It's basically ready. There are just a few things, a few loose ends that I need to fix up on that. But it's like built and almost ready to push live. I don't know if I'm going to push it before I go to Colorado or not. That's one of the top requested ones
that makes sense. I've had.
Shopify was definitely a little bit trickier to integrate than the others.
Welcome to Shopify's API.
Yeah. Yeah. But I got it working. So that's almost ready to go. The other big request that I hear is PayPal. Oh, and we already had Stripe. Stripe was in from the beginning too. So PayPal, I get a lot of requests for, and for a day I started working on adding that, and I ran into some trouble, and I sort of tabled it for now. So I would like to come back to that at some point, but yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think overall you're being a little hard on yourself, and this sounds to me like a scenario that if this was a business that you were kind of going all in on and spending the next year on to try to make it work, you have so much more to learn on what people value, what features you need to add, if any, when the natural conversion happens. Is it day 30? Is it day 60? You just don't know any of these things. Is it an email sequence? Is it a feature that gets added? Is it the daily versus the weekly? Like all these things are the experiments to figure out, to dial in what your customers actually want. The question is, do you have any interest in putting in that effort? Because it does sound like to expect that you have it right from the beginning is ridiculous. It's just it's luck.
So a couple more details on this. About, I don't know, 2 weeks ago or so, I put in place a questionnaire. So when you come to the website now, you enter your email address to get onto the early access list, and then you're immediately shown a questionnaire that asks you, it's just a couple of questions, but one is, hey, these are the integrations that we currently have. Check the ones that you think that you will use. This is before they even get the invite. This is just a gravity form, right? So check the ones that you think you will use. And then I've got a batch of another question that's like, these are the integrations that will probably add soon, but they're not in yet. Check the ones that you would want to see added. And then after that, I say like, okay, you checked off some integrations that we don't have yet. Do you consider those to be deal breakers for you? So I've been looking closely at those responses, and I'm able to see like literally like how many people are requesting which integrations. And that's what led me to like work on Shopify this week, because it was like the second top request. The other thing is like, nope, everyone's saying like, no, it's not a deal breaker. I still want to use it.
Right. But what is it? You don't know. Is this a thing that helps with your personal brand and you should just leave it out there forever as a free product that you pay $100 in hosting for, and it just gets attention and people love it and they associate that with you? Or is it a product that you can sell for, I don't know, 20 grand in a few months because it has something going? Or is it just a playground, or is it something that you just finish and you say, no, I'm not adding anymore. You can use it if you want, or don't. You can pay $10 a month or not, but I'm moving on.
Well, I think we should talk about the pricing tier on it in a minute. But just on that question, like what am I going to do with it? Like I still think of it right now as like I want it to be a good app that is useful, that is worth paying for. I would love to see it grow in MRR. I like how simple it is. I don't want it to become too complex.
Right, people are going to want predictive and
there are some. The other thing that I ask in the survey is like, would you be interested in an agency plan that would allow you to do multiple reports to multiple people with different? And I get a lot of requests for that.
Oh, interesting.
That would definitely be in a higher price tier. It would add more complexity and definitely more time to build. Bigger picture, I am still thinking of this as like, okay, it would be great to have a SaaS app in my portfolio here that I like to use. I think there's value there, but it's not going to be my primary focus. I still think that for now, at least, I think that Process Kit is, I definitely intend to dive back in on that for a number of reasons, because I think that for me personally, like that's sort of like the next area of like the next big business for me to get into in one form or another, you know, around processes and the software and maybe a service and all those different things there. So
right. And that one, again, unlikely to have it perfectly right at first, but the year of work to figure out who wants it and why and what they need and how much they need to pay and all that, that sounds more worth it.
And I see Process Kit as it will be priced higher and it will have larger customers on it, I think. And I want to get back on that. I'm itching to get back into focused on that, but I don't want to just stop working on Sunrise before it has a chance to get some level of success.
Right. A little more air, a little bit more air.
Yeah.
All right, cool. It's exciting. And it's a hell of an accomplishment to build something like that quickly.
I mean, one of the questions on my mind with it is like, all right, is freemium a bad idea on this? Because this is kind of my first trial of using the freemium model. And for those who aren't aware, there's a free plan, like I talked about, and then the pro plan currently is $15 a month. It basically gives you no limits. My thinking is if I were to give this more time and an investment, then I would probably come up with a third plan, which would be like some sort of agency plan, maybe 50 to 100 bucks a month, and you get, you know, multiple reports instead of what you currently get in pro.
Yeah, the freemium thing, I mean, I have no experience with. I assume you don't have that much experience with.
No, I
and
don't.
So it might just be that's just a different mindset. You could be looking at it like, well, 3 out of 30 potential, that's 1 out of 10 of likely customers, and maybe that's the conversion rate. 1 out of 10.
I know that with freemium, you know, generally there is a very low conversion rate, but the idea is it's a volume game. With this, it's still closed to the public. Like you can't just sign up. You got to get invited and a day or two later get the invite. The other thing that happened, it got hunted on Product Hunt.
I was about to ask that. That was not your doing.
No.
Not the normal coincidental.
I don't even know who they were. They put it up on Product Hunt. I didn't even know it was up on Product Hunt until somebody emailed me like, "Oh, I heard about it on Product Hunt." I opened it up and it already has like 200 upvotes. It's like on page one and like,
which is cool. It's like, guys, I know that's how Product Hunt looks like it works, but that's not how it really works. Everyone coordinates their launch.
Dude, it's so funny. Like literally every other product that I've ever done, I've always tried to coordinate a Product Hunt launch and it gets like 8 upvotes. And now I do one where I accidentally, you know, it gets up on there on page one and it got a ton of traffic and, you know, opt-ins and everything.
Oops. What do you do?
I mean, that also informs these early numbers too. So it's like, I know a lot of these early invites were Product Hunt people because basically I'm inviting the people who fill out the survey first. And a lot of those came straight from Product Hunt. There's also a lot of people who are just in my audience who carried over to Sunrise. And I don't know what to make of that. Like, so I'm thinking about like, in terms of freemium, like it hasn't really been exposed to a real freemium market. I haven't really tested it being out there for free for anyone to sign up. And
yes.
So I think I need another like week or two before I could really draw any conclusions on it.
And then open it up.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Yeah. We'll see.
All right, cool, man. So you want to talk churn?
Yeah, let's talk about churn.
Churny. Okay. So I'm going to be slightly vague here. I am focused these days on our metrics and how they are perceived by the outside world. How about that for vagary? The metric that messes up our beautiful kaleidoscope of metrics is churn, right? Everything else is beautiful. The past year was great. The end of the year with the holidays threw things through the roof with the processed revenue and the MRR and everything. But churn's not good. So it's gotten a lot better, but it's still relatively high. So I've been focused on it. I've been thinking and bringing it to the team and saying, what are we doing here? This is not okay. What are we going to do about churn? And so a few days ago, I had a conversation with a VC, right? I love these conversations. A lot of people don't take them. You know, like at some point in a software company, you just start getting emails from VCs and they're like, hey, do you want to talk? We want to hear about what you're up to, sort of thing. They're not, sometimes they're genuine interest. Sometimes it's just, that's their job to go reach out to companies and learn about them. I take those calls because I find that I learn a lot from them. So I got a great VC on the phone and we had this really interesting conversation. And that conversation was a trigger for a lot of internal debate. So the VC's point of view and their point of view is very different. So the way I describe it is like right now, all I can see is I look up toward a mountaintop and I see where I am right now and I see a few base camps to get toward the top. And I'm like, that top is like somewhere in the 10 million ARR zone. Like that's a good thing to climb toward. I have very little idea of what's beyond it. And the VC's point of view is he has seen like, you know, a bunch of people climb their own mountain and then get to the top. And it matters a lot what things look like when you're there. And what he basically brought to me was some honesty around, look, you're in marketing tech. There's a lot of innovation happening in that space. There's a lot of customers. The e-commerce world is huge. Like, right, he's seen a bunch of these things. But if you don't have churn below 5% and you don't have ideally net negative revenue churn, meaning the upgrades are outweighing the churn, you're just going to hit a wall. It might be a 10 million ARR. It might be 15. It might be 20. But
you're
going to
hit like a plateau.
You hit that equilibrium of the churn and growth equal out, and you're stuck. And right now, to say you'll be stuck at 10 million ARR, it doesn't sound that bad.
I would love to be stuck at 10 million.
Same here. But then you have someone with a very different perspective telling you it's not like you get to 10 million ARR and everything's like easy and you're, you know, walking around clicking your heels. No, you have a team of like 80 people and a whole bunch of stress and you got to keep moving forward. So
yeah. And you know, I think that's one of those things where, you know, people might listen to this and be like, well, that's what a VC says, but I'm not really interested in that. But it's like, whether you're interested in VC or not, it's still a good idea to work on churn. I talk to a lot of consultants and freelancers and who want to sort of like scale up beyond themselves and do productized services and everything. And they're like, well, I'm never going to like sell my business. And it's like, well, even if you're never going to sell your business, it's still a good idea to work on systems and processes. Like it's still a good, I think this is one of those things, you know?
Right. It's about the health of your business and your customer base, not just about a metric that someone sees that they make a decision on whether to invest or acquire or something external. So over the past few months, we've started to formulate an approach, a hypothesis. Okay, here's what we think we are going to do about churn. For example, in the month of January, we force, when someone cancels their paying account, we force a form that they have to fill out. Why are you canceling? Basically, what do you need to see improved? So people say, you know, everything from go screw yourself to go screw yourself. And then, or they'll say the most common thing, 75% of those forms in January named price as the reason for cancellation. And then improvement was like add payment processor for Germany and to get better French translation and need a feature or need a integration that you guys don't have. Mm-hmm. But price over and over and over and over again.
I'm also curious about like how do you calculate churn? Like, well, number one, I know that like we could talk about like customer churn or revenue churn, but then there's also, I know in SaaS, are you only including people who are already paying in the churn calculation, or like how does that break out?
Okay, so that's an issue in itself. Okay, so let me just finish this and then we get into that, because okay. it logically goes right into that. So the hypothesis that we started to form was, okay, we have, there's like a river of demand below our current price point, right? We are at $300 a month as the starting point. It is relatively very high for the Shopify market. So our thesis was, okay, it sounds like we should open up a $100 tier per month that has limited revenue, limited features, limited something that allows people an entry point to get in, but doesn't tax us on support or sets limits that lets them naturally upgrade. So we started coming up with different ideas, $100 for the first 10K, $100 until you reach 10K, whether it takes you 2 weeks or takes you 3 months, and then you're on the regular plan. We started coming up with all these different things. What changed that was the conversation with the VC, because it helped focus on the health of the underlying business, right? How do you get net negative revenue churn? People are using it and succeeding with it. So it started to become, let's not just take churn and bring it from 9% to 5%. Let's look at who our ideal customer is and acknowledge that we're not attracting enough of them because we have this inbound defensive mentality. And we're not identifying that company right there is perfect. Let's go show them what we have and let's get them on board because we are confident that we can show them value. You know, I brought that into the conversation, and then we start to think to ourselves, okay.
Like this really becomes a sales problem.
It is an outbound problem. It is a product and customer fit problem. Because we have people who pay $10,000 a month. And their LTV is like 250,000. But our overall LTV is, you know, a fraction of that because so many of our customers come on board, they go through a 14-day trial, they pay once, and then they cancel.
Yeah. That first month, it's almost like I know you can't totally chop it off, but it's like these are people who paid for 1 month because they were sort of just getting set up and then they never really went. Like maybe that's because they never got their e-commerce business off the ground. Like, you know, or they switched to a different shopping cart, or like there's got to be a different churn number for like past 3 months versus.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So I ping our good friend Rob Walling and say, you know, how'd you do this? How did you look at this? And he said the same thing. He looked at it as onboarding churn. That first payment after they leave, like it is an inflated version of your overall churn, because a lot of those people came in, paid once. A lot of them even ask for refunds. You're not even getting the money. So we started to identify, okay, where is the drop off? So we go into Profitwell and we look at our cohort analysis, and we look at where are the biggest drops. So the biggest drops for us are month one and two. It's almost obvious, but
that's got to be the same across so many SaaS.
Right, that's totally normal. But now if we look at our churn after someone has made two payments, meaning they went through the trial, they paid, they went another 30 days, they paid again, all of a sudden our churn looks very, very different. What it's leading us to is to say, we should not be lowering our price. We should be hiring our price, because our most successful customers are the ones that are price insensitive. As long as we give them the value, they don't care. I mean, we have the proof in the fact that people pay us $10,000 a month. So it changed like the whole approach. Instead of saying, let's open up a lower tier because it's so obvious. You know what it was? A friend of mine, Adam, who was at the dinner last night, he called it the marshmallow test. If you lowering the price is eating the one marshmallow, actually preventing those people from signing up and not taking on that new revenue, but improving the health of the customer base and lowering the churn and identifying the people who are better, that's waiting the 15 minutes to eat the two marshmallows. And so now we're starting to think, okay, now what actions can we take? So we've come up with two specific actions that we can take to immediately lower churn for the month of February, right? It's February 1st right now. So I'm like, guys, get it to 5%. Churn in February has to be 5%. What are you going to do? So we come up with two things. We come up with a pause feature. So hey, it's been 14 days. You haven't processed any revenue. Do you just need more time? Like, pay $10 a month to pause your account. So they're not paying $300 and canceling. They're just saying, yes, I do want it.
Would that be proactive, like sort of offering them to, hey, you can like, please downgrade before you turn? Like,
well, okay. So it's, I'm being imprecise here. The pause feature is for paying customers. Once you become a paying customer and you go to cancel it, at the time of cancellation, we say, are you sure you want to cancel or do you want to just put it on pause?
So it's not really proactive. It's like they're
defensive.
They start the cancellation process and it's sort of
Yes. It's preventative.
Yep. I've seen that done on a few different SaaS that I canceled.
Yeah. And it's understandable. Our product is complicated and there is an attraction to not losing all your work and whatever else.
Yeah. And your data, your history too, right? Like,
yeah, exactly right. Now, the second thing we're doing is closer to what we just talked about. We are proactively looking at who is going to convert tomorrow. And if they're not doing well, we are just emailing them and canceling their account. We're just not going to let you waste $300 and make us feel good that we got $300, but really take on someone who's not a good customer. We're just going to prevent you from paying us, prevent you from converting, and prevent you from churning.
You can literally just see that by like how much revenue they were covering in the cart. Or no, this is for the
checkout.
The checkout product.
Not so, can you see how much they're processing? You can go into their account and see, have they done anything? Have they set up a funnel? Have they connected to their payment processor? Like, and if those markers that we identify are, this is not a good paying customer, we're just going to prevent them from turning into a customer.
That was during the trial, like before exactly they right. before their first payment.
So the pause feature once they're already
if they're not customer, like quote unquote like activated by the time the 14 days is up.
Exactly right, and we'll have that be manual right now, and then if it makes a lot of sense. So the
I mean there's got to be a lot of cancellations of just people who literally just didn't set it up yet, like they just got charged. And like they could be paying customers, they just got busy if they just waited like another 30 days.
That's right. And a lot of our customers fall into two categories that are like at opposite ends of the spectrum. One is just getting started in e-commerce, heard about our product, is very aspirational. And it's just, you know, if they made $1,500 in their e-commerce business, they should not be paying us $300 a month. The other type is the much larger, the best customers, and they can't get started in 2 weeks. No way. That takes them 3 months to get their teams in order and this and make the switch and make sure this thing is in place and all these other things. I think we're going to get churned down to 5% by just identifying who the right customers are. And then once we have that over the next, call it 2 weeks, then we're just going to go the next step. Okay, what else can we do to get our customer base to be full of people who are more likely to succeed? So we might go back to forcing a demo. You know, we have this advantage where when you connect your Shopify store, we can run a script in your store that tells us how much revenue you've made over the past 30 days. And if you're under a certain level, we're just gonna say, we're sorry, you don't qualify for Cartrack right now. Just take control and be proactive in deciding who our customer base is, instead of just accepting the inbound and being happy watching revenue go up and then having churn go out, and then all of a sudden, it's almost like we've set up a situation where we look worse than we actually are. Because our best customers are in love with the product and use the hell out of it and make a bunch of money, but our metrics are ugly because we're not taking control over our own customer base.
I've been looking at churn for a long time in audience ops too. I think of audience ops, and I look at audience ops very much like a SaaS in its metrics. And that frustrates me a lot of times because it's like, in a lot of ways, it is not a SaaS. And churn is one of those things where it's like, we don't have that onboarding churn at all, you know, because clients pay a good amount of money on day one to get started. So they come in like pre-committed to giving it some time. So we don't see that. And about 2 years ago, we did a lot of work on our first month onboarding experience, and that like instantly fixed a lot of like cancellations that happened around like the 2-3 month mark. Those are gone; like those don't happen anymore. So now when I look at churn, it's like, or just cancellations in general, it's like around the 10-12 month mark. There's plenty of customers who've been on for 3 years, and then you know, there's just that constant level of, like, we have reached that point now where, like, growth has slowed. It does start to even out. And the frustrating thing about it for me, partly it's because I'm not actively working on this problem. You know, I'm just working on new stuff. I'm not really focused on audience apps. But the frustrating thing is that, like, people will churn out of audience apps when they're sometimes, like, when they're they've been happy, but they just outgrow it, or they take content in-house, or their business gets acquired or something, like things like that, that I sometimes feel like churn is a little bit out of my control. But in reality, when I look at it, I can easily point to the segment of our client base who are solid and with us for much longer than that and continue to be with us. And so, yeah, like it comes back to that sales and marketing role, like, and doing the work of, like, right now it's like defensive sales. Like I'm just bringing in sales that come in organically. I don't have a person who's like tasked with, like, go out and find our best types of leads, you know?
And I assume, just like us, it's very rare when you say, you know what, you're not a good customer. You should not be paying us. Do not sign up for us. This other product is better for you. It's rare, but it's better off.
Again, like, all of our stuff is inbound, so a lot of those people self filter themselves out. Like, most people who, yeah, like most people who ultimately get to a call with me, they're on board. Like they know it's for them.
Mm-hmm. So it's a formality, that conversation. Just
a lot of times, because sometimes we'll get leads who, like, maybe fill out the consultation form, but then they just don't book the call. And it's like, okay, like they weren't serious. And then occasionally, this is really rare, but I'll be on a call, and these actually kind of frustrate me when I'm on a sales call and, like, they want to be convinced, like they want me to sell them on audience ops.
Yes.
Like, and no. Like, I just don't do that. Like,
good.
And they feel that too, you know, like I'll just be like, all right, I mean, you know, if you don't think content is the right strategy for you, like,
yes,
don't
do
content.
That right,
like,
around,
you know,
you turn into the most arrogant person. Yeah. Like, nah, yeah. I'm not selling you. I'm all good over here. If yep. you're interested, then cool. So we had a great coincidence that this week we signed on with HubSpot.
Yeah.
Remember I told you we were looking at Salesforce. We're looking at,
I did add HubSpot to Sunrise this week.
Oh, very nice. Hell yeah. So we ended up going with HubSpot, and going through HubSpot's sales process was a completely different universe from our sales process. And we just signed for the year, right? 20 grand for the year. You pay upfront, you pay another $2,500 in onboarding training. And right now, I don't care what anyone says, we're using HubSpot.
Yeah.
Like, we are committed. Yeah.
They lock you in for life. Yeah.
Right. And then they can work on us over the next 12 months and upsell us new services and new products. And you can see that net negative revenue churn. You can see how that's possible with a healthier customer base full of people who are the most likely to succeed with your product. And that feels like waiting the 15 minutes for the two marshmallows. And that's usually the right thing to do in life overall. And it feels like we're heading in the right direction. It means we're basically heading toward enterprise sales, but it feels right.
Yeah. I mean, but, like, that's, you know, when you're talking about, like, well, how can we prevent the lower budget clients from signing up in the beginning? Like, does that actually mean increase the monthly price, or maybe you just add like a $2,000 setup fee? You know,
I think there are different levers to pull between the length of the trial, the amount of the monthly, the ability to pay monthly or forcing annually, the onboarding process. All of these things are levers. That's the biggest task that this sales consultant has for us, is we don't even know what that process looks like, let alone how it looks for our company. So give us a clue on what we need to look like as a company and as a process in a year, so that this is what we do. We go out and we close $2,000-$5,000 deals, and we have a sales team, and we have an onboarding team, we have a success team, and we get to that 10 million ARR, whether it's in a year or in 3 years, but with a healthier customer base that has the momentum of continuing to increase because of that net negative revenue churn and that initial churn number looks and feels a lot better. So it's like, it felt like that conversation with the VC was just a little glimpse into the future on, you actually should be thinking about what it looks like when you get to the top of the mountain, at least the top that you can see right now. But once you get there, there's going to be a next peak to go up, but it matters what shape and condition you're in when you get to that peak. That determines whether or not you can get to the next one. So it was like, yep, it was one of those situations where I was very grateful for the conversation, brought that internally, and very quickly realized, oh, I was heading us down the wrong track on lowering the price, and let's do the harder thing.
Yep. Yeah.
It's good.
Well, yeah, I think this was a good conversation.
It's a good one. I think it was a little long, if anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, brother. Have a great time at the next big snow. Send some pics. Put that on Twitter. Maintain that voice so people can get your contributions in the convo.
That's right. I'm looking forward to, you know what I'm looking forward to? Like coming back and having, because there are so many questions in my mind right now. Like, what am I going to be focused on when I come back from Colorado? I can't wait to find out what that is. Because I don't know yet.
Very interesting.
We'll see.
Very interesting. Cool. Keep opening it up. Let's get more numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Matthew. Good talking. See everybody.